Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hey Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tater. Doing good. The spring has sprung, and it's much nicer out than it was this time last week when we recorded.
Yeah, kind of a overnight situation there. Here it was like 60, and then it was 20, and then it was 40, and now it's 60 again. All right.
Yeah, we hit almost 70 today.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, good day for a walk. Had to get out and get the walk in.
I'm ready for warmer weather. It has been a more bitter than the past few winters up here in New York, so I'm down for that. It's been very wet. There's been a lot of snow and a lot of gross, like, I don't mind the cold, but I hate the cold and wet.
Well, we'd get a couple days of decent weather, and then it would be a cold front coming through with moisture of some type, whether it was rain or snow, and it just seemed like a regular pattern that would hit every week. I mean, it snowed here on like three different Fridays in a row. It just kept coming through in a wave.
Amen. Right for your weekend.
Yeah, doing the wave on us. Not in a good way.
Well, so for this week, there's a lot going on in the world right now. Can't deny that.
Nope, sure can't.
For a podcast like this, you know, we talk about alcohol history, drinking culture, cocktails. This is probably an escape for some people. I mean, it is for me. You know, it's a fun reason once a week to tuck into a little bit of history, a little bit of knowledge. And I look forward to that. And I don't really want to bring too much of the outside world into here. But, you know, at some point, if there's a way to educate on a current topic, I think that's a good thing to do.
Well, and I think right now... I mean, at least in America, that we are all rooting for the Ukrainians. And, you know, they have certainly proven that they are tough, that they are resilient. You couldn't be prouder of a people and their leader, the job that he has done. And so we thought maybe what we would look at with our podcast is as a salute to them. And their drinking culture.
Yeah. I really do believe that cultures are at their best when they're, you know, growing things and making things from the things they grow and sharing those with friends, family, food, drink. That's always the best stuff about a place you've never been before, you know?
Yeah. So. And they've got a lot of culture built around drinking. I think we covered, you know, Russian culture before. And so, you know, a lot of the stuff was tied to drinking. And of course, you know, they were part of the former Soviet Union. So a lot of those same type customs they've adopted.
Yeah. Well, it's cool to see the similarities and the differences because that's the magic of, you know, where there are things that we all have in common around the world. And then the same idea goes in a completely different direction, just, you know, across a border as far as, like, how we process one beverage versus another. I think that's the cool, those little differences. So this week we're going to be talking all about Ukraine's spirits, their cultures, their traditions. And I think first and foremost, we've got to start with the ubiquitous spirit of Ukraine, which is Horoka.
Yep. It's like their version of Malort.
No. That's absolutely wrong. It's more like their version of vodka, but we're gonna get into why that actually maybe vodka is Russia's version of horoka, but I'll get to that. Now, the word itself, it's kind of like the word sake in Japanese, where if you study Japanese, you know, sake can reference specifically sake, but it can also mean alcohol, you know, like that's just the word for booze. So likewise, horoka can refer to a specific beverage in Ukraine. It can also refer to any alcoholic beverage. The root actually comes from horti, or to burn, and we see its first general use dating back to the 15th century. And this kind of lines up to when distilling was first utilized in this region. So it refers in the specific sense to Ukrainian liqueur composed mainly of ethanol and water, usually distilled from grain and like highly filtered. So it's very clean, not aged. Now, this sounds like vodka, and it is very much similar to vodka. But to say it's Ukrainian vodka might not be exactly right, because historically speaking, the spirit probably came first from the region that is now Ukraine. So there's a lot of arguments. You know how, like I don't know, in like the punk world, we like there's the argument of like, who made punk first? Was it the British or was it New York? Like, and then there's all these other parts of the world where like, no, it just like other cultures did it way before that. You were just the loudest about it. It's similar with like Polish versus Russian vodka, what came first, whereas the actual territory that had an abundance of grain and thus started fermenting the excess grain into a distilled spirit is now what is modern day Ukraine. So,
yeah. And of course, like so many of the things we've discussed in the 15th and 16th century, it started out purely for medicinal purposes.
Yes. Just for what ails you. All of these regions, the sort of Slavic regions, created a drinking culture around this distilled grain-based spirit. And I keep saying grain. Obviously, it can be made from other things. You know, we associate potatoes with vodka a lot. That came later. But it can nowadays be made with the potatoes. It can be made with sugar beets. It can be made with honey sometimes. But, you know, why we call it vodka instead of, like, vodka or horoka is really just because the proliferation of Russian vodka in, like, the 80s and the 90s, that's really when it became a thing that we all expected to find at a bar, and Russians called it vodka. That was the word that got exported, so that's what we were introduced to it as. Now, historically, it was like there might have been a slight preference for wheat, but as I mentioned, nowadays it can be made from lots of things. It probably started out a little lower proof, like in its origins back in the 15th century, but nowadays, most modern horka clocks in around 30% alcohol up to like our standard 40% alcohol. So it's not super high octane. It is pure, but that doesn't mean it's higher alcohol than any other spirit. It just has less esters in it, less other things floating around in it.
Yeah, it just sounds really potent when they say it's basically alcohol and water. That's it.
Well, so is vodka.
I don't know. Vodka just doesn't sound as dangerous as horolka. That sounds dangerous.
It is a cooler word, I think. Now, there is a DIY version, if you're interested, the thing that we would call moonshine. Now, I guess here's your questionable your spirit here. And that's samohonka, which translates to self-made or self-distilled, sometimes just called samohan. It can be rough stuff, so they'll often mask it with infusions to cover the flavor. I saw somebody talking about anecdotally that when you come across this Ukrainian moonshine, you're supposed to swirl the bottle. And if you see that little tornado inside, they call it the zmia, or the snake. And that means it's good stuff, which if you've ever swirled literally any bottle of liquid any time, like that happens.
I've never seen it not do that.
I guess it's really bad if it doesn't.
It's too thick.
Yeah, if it does, you're good. But, you know, speaking of infusions, they are not just for moonshine. Much like we talked about in the Russian episode, Ukrainians also love infusions in their horoka.
Now, the traditional way, a lot of times that they drink it is just simply as a shot. And it was not really a full shot, though. They say they only pour you half a shot, and that if you're drinking it, don't drink anything else.
Yes.
Because it is all you need, and it should be served cold. But they said if you serve it too cold, that's an indication somebody may be giving you bad horolka.
Yes, yeah. You want it, like, chilled but not frozen.
Yeah.
and it's to be, like it's not you can take it all down in one shot. That's fine. But it's still meant to be savored. So if you take it all in one shot, you're meant to hold it in your mouth and sort of slowly swallow it, taste the, you know, the the flavors in it, or you can sip it from your glass. So it's not wrong to sip from your glass. But there are, like, you know, there are the flavored versions. There are lots of fruit flavors, you know, kind of more normal stuff that we come across in, like, flavored vodka, raspberry, blueberry, what have you. There are nut flavors. There are herb flavors, you know, mint or basil. There's even, like, a milk flavor. But the one that I was introduced to this behind the bar, the one that kind of gets exported almost is, like, you'll see it called, like, what Ukrainian vodka is, which is not accurate, but it is perhaps their most popular style of infusion, and that is Horilka Zyprzem, sometimes called Pertsivka, that's more of the Russian term for it, but it is a Horilka with hot peppers, and sometimes honey as well added to it. So it's got, like, whole hot peppers are put in, which doesn't just impart heat to it, but it also adds a vegetable bitterness. So it's a very complex flavor that it adds to it. And this is sort of, this, you can find this, like, this is a really unique product, but kind of the quintessential, if you want to try, like, a Ukrainian horilka, like, this is the one you should try, because it's really unique.
Wow, that sounds pretty potent. I don't know. I'm not much on spicy food to start with, but drinking that with hot peppers, you know, infused in it, man, that'd be rough.
But I love the idea of, like, hot peppers and honey, though. Like, that's two of my favorite flavors together, you know, like sriracha and honey together on, like, a sandwich or a pizza. That's the good stuff. So I feel and there is, you know, speaking of that specific flavor combination, I've seen it in the Nemirov brand, which is, it's the one that I've seen the most in America. I'm not sure about the world at large, but they're Ukrainian-based. In fact, they're the number one exporter of Ukrainian spirits, and they date back to, 1872, making Ukrainian horilka in traditional methods. Now, it's a little confusing that as an export, they label their product Ukrainian vodka. But once again, this just makes sense because that's the word the world recognizes. And when you're trying to sell a spirit on the international market, you want to use a word that people are comfortable with. So calling it vodka instead of horilka works better for them. Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Then people wouldn't be as scared of it.
Yeah. I mean, you've already accepted hot peppers and honey, but, like, oh, I don't know what that other word means. But vodka, I know vodka. I mean, that being said, but, like, people buy, I don't know, what, birthday cake vodka, cotton candy vodka, chocolate vodka, blue cheese vodka. Like, there's a lot of flavors of vodka on the shelf that are not any more concerning than hot pepper and honey. But that's more or less what the spirit is. We kind of got into a little bit, but I want to get into how do you drink it?
Well, I also saw they offered a little guide if your night is going to consist of horilka drinking, that it said that it's often served as an aperitif, and it's known to increase the appetite and stimulate digestion. And he said the things that pair well with it include pickled cucumbers, tomatoes, mushrooms and sauerkraut, herring and onions. I say, so, you know, those are some of the foods, if you can imagine, that they recommend that mix well with it. But that's probably just a little insight into Ukrainian cuisine and what they like.
It's similar to what we talked about. I mean, really, when you're drinking this, it's a lot of similar customs to, we talked about drinking Russian vodka. So you have your zakuski, which is the food that you just talked about. Yeah, pickles, fatty meats, brown breads, like savory stuff meant to go along with it.
But to absorb alcohol.
Yeah. Well, like sallow, which I think is just pork fat. Like that's a common accompaniment. But you always have food and you always have company. You do not drink horilka alone. Sometimes like, well, drinking horilka alone means you're an alcoholic. So the alcoholics don't drink it alone in public was the assumption. But it's kind of similar in that if you're drinking it, you must be celebrating something. So you need to have friends and you need to have food. You don't just pour it for yourself. Everybody has poured this small glass of it. And whether you sip it or you shoot it, you wait until everybody is poor the next round to have it, and they're toast each round. So in this way, it's similar to like some of the stuff we've talked about with Japanese culture and Chinese culture, where you're not ever just, your drinking isn't a personal thing. You're not just ordering for yourself, serving yourself. It's a communal thing. We're all drinking the same thing. We're drinking at the same time, and we're waiting for each other so that every new glass represents a new opportunity to toast each other.
Well, the other thing they said too, this is one of their traditions, is that the one who pours the shots the first time around becomes the official pourer for the night, because it's considered bad luck to pass this responsibility on to someone else.
Is that like the designated driver of the evening?
Yeah, you're the designated drinker, or the designated pourer for the rest of the night. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So if you pour the first round, by God, be ready to do it the rest of the night because you're elected.
That's a little easier than the cultures that, like, it passes down the line and you've got to be ready. Like, and I don't know, when it comes to you, you've got to toast. So I like that organization, you know, like, this is your job. Do it all night. I even saw that there's a little tradition that, like, after you shoot or swallow your shot, you hold the glass upside down so the last drop falls on the floor. And it's sort of the Ukrainian pour one out for whatever you believe you pour one out for, whether it's the, you know, the ghosts or fallen friends or absent friends, but it's a little bit of a twist of a wrist that you're supposed to do with your glass. The toasts are a big thing in Ukrainian culture.
Absolutely.
I could try to run through them all, but there's a lot. In fact, there's this quote that I liked, which is, the first shot of Horoka lifts your spirits ever so slightly. The second one sends you flying like a hawk, and each drink thereafter, the person soars as happy and free as a bird. Now, that implies many shots, and indeed, there are many shots as there are many toasts.
Well, they maintain a certain order of how they want to do that, of what you're supposed to be toasting to, and it's a very disciplined-type process of how you're supposed to do it.
And it's not necessarily taking place every time you drink, but you know, this is, Horoka is used for, you're celebrating, you're with friends, you've got food there, and this is how you drink. So,
yeah. And you don't have to toast with Horoka. You can have other drinks. You know, you can be drinking other beverages there. It's just a process of these toasts that that they do it, and you are supposed to toast to different things each round as you go through.
Right. So, like, there's a warm-up. So, before, when everyone's still filling their plates, it's okay to do a little warm-up toast, but then
I'm just stretching over here.
Yeah, just, you know, stretching out my calves, stretching out my toasted muscles.
Don't want to pull a hammy while I'm chugging that first shot there because I wasn't warmed up.
No pressure on them. This is, just getting used to drinking shot. But the first toast is always about the reason you're there. So, this is like a little meet and greet. You know, your host is going to say, why have I invited you here tonight? What are we toasting to tonight? A birthday, a marriage, a holiday. That's the first toast.
It's Tuesday.
Sure, yeah, you know, whatever. It's Wednesday, but all right. The second toast, and now this is very important, apparently, like according to tradition, it has to be quick. Like the second toast follows the first toast very quickly. I understand that, like in the sense of, okay, I've had some alcohol. Now I need to have some more alcohol.
But, right.
That one's usually to friends or company. So, you know, the people that you've gathered there.
And it's not impolite to shout down the guy that's supposed to be giving the toast and say, you're not supposed to leave too much time between the first toast and the second toast. Yeah. It's all right to point that out to him.
I like that. Now, I thought this was interesting because instead of cheers, a lot of Ukrainians say budmo, which means will be.
If somebody shouts out budmo, there's a response. You're supposed to shout back, hey.
Right. And then
budmo, 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 then you're hey, hey, hey. So there is a proper response in the bar drinking. If somebody shouts that out, your part is hey.
That's true. I can do both of those. So thank you for that. But the third toast is for the ladies, or to love, or to loving the ladies. But traditionally, it's a toast by men appreciating the women in their lives or the women present.
And it does say you should mention something specific. You shouldn't just say, here's because I love women. You should say, you know, because you love this about women, or, you know, your wife or your girlfriend or whatever it is. You're supposed to be specific to have a good, sincere toast.
Well, and then to counter that, you have the fourth toast, which is for men. So that's mm-hmm. for women to toast something specific about men that they like. The fifth toast is to family or to land, the nature of Ukraine itself or Ukrainian food. The sixth toast is to the soldiers who have lost their lives protecting their land. This actually started as sort of tradition in the War of Donbass in eastern Ukraine, where it was, you know, they wanted to toast to fallen warriors. And you know, we've been hearing this a lot on the news lately, Slava Ukraine, and that's the toast that you would give as the sixth toast. The seventh toast is, I guess, sort of a free-for-all. Like, this is where we can get creative. This is the do-as-you-will toast.
Well, it's also to lost relatives. They said that's one of the popular things that they do with the seventh toast is to do it to lost relatives, and that in their honor, you don't clink your glasses, you raise them to the sky instead of clinking them together.
Oh, that's sweet.
And they also said if you're not keeping up, if somebody points you out as not keeping up, it's okay to pour them a penalty shot, that they have to take that.
I love that. You're too drunk to keep up. Drink more.
Yeah, that's your penalty. Drink more.
The eighth toast is for your host, for their hospitality, your friends for great company. This is sort of the time now you're all loose enough that you can give your speeches, you know, give your deep emotional sentiments. This is, you know, readying you for the ninth toast where it's the beginning of goodbye, but not goodbye. It's like where you start to say goodbye because there are still three last shots that you're supposed to have together before saying goodbye.
Yeah.
So now there's this like a tradition for the ninth toast where you would give it to somebody like if they couldn't stand up, this meant that they need to stay there tonight. So it was also a test.
Give them another shot if they can't stand up.
Yes. If this is your last shot, because then you're staying here, so you're not leaving. But if you survive that shot, then the next shot is it's the tenth toast is this. For the horse, I guess, before sitting on a horse, I guess should have had one more shot to make sure they can ride. So this is obviously dates back, but if you're going to ride home on your horse, then we have to make sure that you can get through this last shot so you're sober enough to ride your horse. nowadays, if you're too drunk to ride a horse, you don't get in a car. So, you know, there's that.
Well, they also said that if you don't, you know, that your toast should be sincere, specific, and heartfelt when you give them, and you should, you know, kind of have a point, but don't be too long. If you're right. too long with these toasts, it's all right for people to shout you down so you get back to drinking.
Got to get straight to it. I mean,
yeah, no filibustering.
No. Well, like the 11th toast is to get into the stirrups is the translation. So that's just literally, if a guest could get into the stirrups, it was considered acceptable to leave and go home. So just kind of get out of here. It's the 11th toast.
Well, he was able to stand up out of the chair. He's good to go. Get him on the horse and get him the hell out.
I like that for it because, I don't know, I've definitely had those house parties or dinner parties where people don't leave. So having a tradition that's built into like a 3-2-1 countdown of you getting the hell out of here, like to you going to your car, to you driving home, to you calling your Uber, to you opening your front door with your keys. Do you get the message? Do you get what I'm saying?
Hotel, motel. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
It's closing time. Absolutely. I love, I don't know. I mean, and this all sounds very ceremonial. I'm sure in practice it's a lot looser and fun. And, you know, I mean, I love a culture that's based around, well, to have a full night of drinking, you have to have 11 shots.
That is a full night of drinking.
Yeah. But, of course, it's like, as you mentioned, it's okay if you're not drinking Hrelka. There are other delicious beverages to seek out. So I thought we mm-hmm. could talk briefly about some of the other stuff Ukraine has to offer. Dad, I know you're always curious about the beer situation.
Oh, yeah, always.
Ukraine isn't a massive beer market. You know, they're kind of influenced by their surrounding territories. You get a lot of pale lagers, a lot of wheat beers. But specifically in the past decade, they've had a lot of growth in microbrewing, even an interest in home brewing. And there are several Ukrainian-based brands that are sort of dominating the market now. So there's lots of homebrew that's available there. And along with the sort of, we talked about this a bit in the Russian episode, but kvass, which is that bread beer that's very mm-hmm. low proof, but kind of a local mm-hmm. thing you should try, is also popular in Ukraine. Now, I did think on the subject of beer, this was kind of a badass story. There was one brewery that has popped up in the news lately, the Pravda Brewery in Ukraine, that has switched from making beer in their bottling facility momentarily to bottling Molotov cocktails. So,
all right.
Shout out to that. They are
supplying power to the people.
They're supplying the soldiers and the police of the Ukraine right now. So, I have to wait for their beer. They did come out with a beer specifically targeting Putin before all of this. They had the derogatory name on the beer. So they stick by their politics.
Well, I would think these bottles of Horolka could be switched over to Molotov cocktails real fast, too.
I am sure that they are being repurposed. Mm-hmm. I've seen videos. While wine is not a huge part, likewise, of its culture, it's actually winemaking in Ukraine dates back to the 4th century. They've had winemaking for a long time. It's never really gotten the international acclaim that it maybe deserves, because they have some amazing wines. They both have, like, local varietals that they do really well. And also, it's kind of a weird dystopian truth, but as, like, climate change changes wine regions around the world, Ukraine has kind of moved into a spot where they have both northern and southern winemaking regions that are growing really well. So there's actually a lot of good wine being made in Ukraine right now. And even before that, they specialize in, like, a lot of dessert wines. They have their own unique take on sparkling wine, which is really cool. So if you're a wine drinker, there are definitely some Ukrainian wines that you can check out on the market.
Cognac is another thing that they drink pretty regularly there, too. One of the things that ranks right up there, it's behind, you know, vodka and Horolka, but it's right up there.
Oh, that's cool. Well, they have a couple, like, specialty beverages that you can run into. Spodiketch, which is a sweet alcoholic beverage, sort of a dessert liqueur, which uses Horolka as a base, and then that's mixed with, like, black currants, prunes, nuts, cinnamon cloves, various spices. It's sort of a viscous, sweet drink served in, like, a small glass. I feel like it might be similar, obviously not the same base beer, but like a port or something sweet after dinner that you'd sip. There's also Ukraine makes Mandovka, which is a honey-based alcoholic beverage. It's similar to mead. In fact, the root word for both is the same. It's consumed a lot around Christmas time, so it's like a sweet honey alcohol around 5% on the low end, up to 16%. But like a wine to beer area.
Well, in the non-alcoholic realm of drinks that are common there, I found unusual, is carbonated water. They will just order carbonated water. No flavorings or anything, just carbonated water. So it said that's actually very common. So if you're there and you order water in a restaurant, you need to ask for still water instead of, so that you don't get carbonated water.
So sparkling outweighs regular water?
Yeah. Yeah, apparently so. Huh.
Well, it's worth noting, of course, that the drinking age in Ukraine is 18. So pretty normal for the world at large. But it is also worth noting that public drinking laws are heavily enforced. You do not drink in public. Mm-hmm. You don't drink on the streets.
No. And one other habit or tradition that they have that I remember this was probably in the Russian one. I don't really remember for sure, but I remember us talking about it, is as you drink, you put your empty bottles under the table.
Oh, yeah.
And that dates back to, it's actually a French thing in origin, where the French people would serve you and they would come back and they would count up your empty bottles on the table for what your bill was. So they would hide bottles under the table so that they wouldn't get charged as much.
That's true. Yeah, so, that came from
so that's part Russia of the tradition.
In France.
And then one other one that I liked, another tradition, was, that, I don't know if you saw this or not, how when you indicate to the bartender how you want another drink, you point to your neck.
No.
Yeah, you know, they said that the way that most people say that happened, they said people claim that the gesture originated during the days of Peter the Great, that after performing a favor for Peter the Great, sailor was asked what he wanted as a reward, and he replied that he wanted free booze for the rest of his life. So Peter complied and gave him an official note entitling the sailor to free drinks anytime, anywhere. Of course, the sailor quickly lost the note because he went on a drinking binge and got drunk and lost his note. So he went back and he said, "Hey, I need another note." And Peter refused. But instead, he had the man's neck tattooed with a certain script on it that, and then passed the law that if you have this tattoo, you will be allowed to drink anywhere, anytime for free. So that's why you point to your neck, because that's where the tattoo was on the guy when he did that.
I wonder what that tattoo was. That's great.
I don't know, but I'd like to get a copy of it.
I know. That would be a cool, I mean, in the realm of cool neck tattoos, it's hard to, you know, that would be one.
Free drink tattoo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And issued by Peter the Great.
Yeah. Do you have any other
I am out of facts at that point. I'm out of facts and dad jokes at this point.
Well, there is it's a brief rundown of some of the cool stuff about Ukrainian drinking traditions and cultures and the beverages you can find there, but definitely worth checking out. I've seen a lot of liquor stores putting Ukrainian vodka up for sale, or, you know, as we now we know it's Horoka, but it's vodka in the international market. So if your store is providing that, that's cool. I do want to say as an aside that the people that are like dumping out like Smirnoff and Stoli on TikToks to like prove a point, like if it's here, it's been paid for already. And also specifically Stoli and Smirnoff aren't made in Russia anymore. So like, I don't really know what what you're doing.
Yeah. So hopefully the distributors know, because they're the ones actually buying it. So hopefully know where it's come from and cut off the Russian flow.
They should stop doing that. But if you've got it on your back bar, you've got a case in your restaurant, maybe instead of like dumping it out, you could like put it in a punch and put a drink on special and then like donate the proceeds to like a Ukrainian charity in need. I think that would be a better solution than just dumping it out on a TikTok. But, you know, as I just said, we're not historians and we're not political scientists. We're a drink podcast. We talk about booze history. That's kind of the extent of what I feel like our wheelhouse is, at least mine. It's definitely my wheelhouse.
I don't even know that much. I'm just along for the ride. But I will say this, at this point, we are with them. Even if we're not there, we're with them in spirit.
I feel like growing up, I felt a certain cynicism towards any sense of like a national identity. You know, I never, that idea of like, we're all the same. There's just lines on a map that separate us and I don't see the point. And I feel like that view in my mind has changed as I've both worked in restaurants, been introduced to other cultures, traveled, learned things, to realize that like, there are a lot of similarities that we just talked about with Ukrainian drinking traditions and cultures that overlap with Russia. But then there are also some things that relate to, you know, China or Japan or our culture. Like that's kind of the beauty of terroir. We use this word a lot on this show, which specifically means just the character of the land and how it expresses itself in a beverage. But I think you can think of it in on a broader sense of like, What defines a people? I feel like it's encased a lot in the things they grow in that land, you know, the wind that blows through it and the water that rains down on it and the sun that shines on it, and then specifically the hands enriched by tradition and culture that turn it into something new and different and cool and beloved. And that's worth fighting for.
Hear, hear. I'll drink to that.
Slava Ukraine. Toast to you. 11 toast to you.
To the motherland.
All right. Well, hey, thank you all for joining us. I hope everyone's doing all right, hanging in there. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. It's always a pleasure, and I always learn something.
Yeah, me as well. Thank you, of course, to the members of our Patreon. Thank you for making this happen. If you're curious about that, there are rewards, stickers, coasters, special episodes, videos that you can check out over there. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. We also have a Gmail, neatthebozecast at gmail.com. And if you want to talk to other people about booze or whatever, or culture, you can do that.
Meet the Boozecast group page right there on Facebook.
There you go.
Every once in a while, old Zuckerberg joins us.
What? Oh, he doesn't.
Hey, who knows? He's probably listening in.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know a good drink and hit him in the face. That's a Red Bull and vodka man if I've ever seen one. Hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me.
Woodmo.
Hey.
I did it wrong.
As long as you're drinking, you're not doing it wrong.